Good morning. If you have your Bibles, we'll turn to Proverbs chapter number 12. Proverbs chapter number 12 and verse number 11 is where our thoughts will come from this morning. Chapter 12 and verse 11. He that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. There's a lot in that verse to me. The Proverbs to me have become more and more personal to me through the years, less and less just a, you know, to many of us, the Proverbs are just a bunch of fortune cookie excerpts, but to me, they've become more and more personal, and personal in the fact that they teach me about God. They teach me about the way that He is, and in them, I see the glory of God. In the Proverbs, I get a picture, I get an image of God. A pastor preached yesterday at the conference about seeing the glory of God, and it's a message he's preached before, and it's a message I never tire of hearing. I was excited when he turned to his text. I had driven 2 hours to hear a rerun, but it was a rerun that I wanted to hear, and it's one that I like to hear. How we need to see the glory of God, and in the Proverbs, they build to me a picture of God. All through the Proverbs, we see if this happens, then this happens. If this happens, then this happens. And how does that happen? God does it. And it's the Proverbs are the observations of a very wise man of how things always happened. And they always happen that way because there was another force outside the universe that made it always happen that way. And we, you and I, know that force to be God. Particularly His Son, Jesus Christ. We know that to be Him. And in the Proverbs, in this, what may seem to some an overbearing set of rules, I see Jesus Christ. I see that if you do this, then this happens, and if you do this, then this happens, and they're not all bad things, and many of them are very good things, and this is one of them that's a very good thing. And it says, he that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread. What I love about this proverb is that there is a whole lot not said between tilling and eating bread. There's a whole lot of stuff between there. There's a lot that goes on. There's planting, there's weeding, there's watering, there's harvesting, there's threshing, there's grinding, there's baking, there's stoking the fire, there's getting the wood, there's other ingredients to the bread, there's oil, there's a lot here that's not mentioned. And God said that he that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread. I love that. To me, that's just like all of God's promises. And in this, I see a pattern in God's promises. And sometimes I feel, I believe that we, and I should say me, get discouraged with God's promises because we don't understand them many times. We don't understand the workings of God. And in this we see a promise. He that tilleth shall be satisfied with bread. It's a very simple thing just to till. And yet he doesn't say he that tills, plants, weeds, waters, harvests, thresh, grinds, bakes, gathers oil and wood will have bread. I like this promise. It's he that tilleth will have plenty of bread. Now there is, of course, a principle taught in this of labor and of work, and I don't want to deny that principle that's taught there, but I think there's a lot more in this proverb and in all the promises of God. I see a pattern, and I want to look at that pattern. It's one that I like. So let's pick apart this promise here a little bit. First of all, we see that there's a condition, and in many of God's promises, there's a condition. It says, he that tilleth. That's the condition that was laid out. Now, I don't want us to confuse a condition with a price. Don't believe that you earn the promises of God. I don't believe that. But many of the promises of God have a condition that by its nature excludes those that don't come into that condition. Now, I understand that God is sovereign, and it's not our point to speak about that. I believe He'll bring you into that condition. And if you line up with any of the conditions of God, it's because a sovereign work has taken place in your life. And I don't want to negate that in any way or take away from that in any way, but I just want to say, first of all, that there's a condition. There's a condition for the promises of God. And in this case, it's He that tilleth. And really, when you look at it in light of everything else that has to happen for you to have bread, it's a very light condition. And I believe that condition in many of the promises of God, you will be brought to by His power and His sovereignty. But nonetheless, I want to note that there's a condition for the promise. The next thing that I want to note is that there is a great gap between tilling and eating. There's a great space of time. There's a whole lot that occurs between tilling and eating. And that time takes faith and waiting. The promises of God require faith and waiting. I attach waiting to the end of that because I don't believe there's such a thing as faith without waiting. If it was there, it's not faith, that's sight. There is waiting, there's always waiting. And sometimes the waiting is what discourages us. That's where we fall apart is with the waiting. And so I want to say that waiting goes right along with that faith there. There's time. And that time is filled with faith. We see also in the promise, in the pattern of this promise, that there's submission. There were two ways to go. There was the way of tilling the land there. Notice the latter part of the proverb, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. There's a lot of other ways that man has invented. There's a lot of inventions of man, a lot of ways that we try to get away from the ways of God. We try to make a way outside the ways of God. Whether it be in this proverb, just to make a living and to have food, there are vain ways, and there's always new schemes and things on TV. Call this number, try this thing, you'll be a millionaire tomorrow. But it doesn't just represent the financial to me, but there are a lot of vain ways we try to come up with outside the promises of God, outside the method. God created this earth, and He created it in such a way that it brought forth plants if you did and followed certain rules. And man today doesn't want to follow the rules. But there is a way. And if you just accept that way, yes, there's some time involved, but man wants, you know, instant gratification. And so he follows vain ways, trying to get ahead of the game. But there is a way, and it takes submission to that way. That's also required in the promise, a level of submission to the way. The next thing that I want to notice about this promise that we see here is that the steps or means in between the condition and the promise are not necessarily promised. They're not necessarily guaranteed. We're not given all the steps between tilling and eating. We're not given all those things. And they were not promised in this proverb. The way or the means was not promised as to exactly what would occur. And I want to pause on that for a moment because I feel it's very worthwhile to consider that. In other words, the promise was bread. The promise was bread. The promise was not a harvest. There was no promise of a harvest listed there. The promise was bread. There was no promise of plenty of rain. That was not there. There was not promise of good weather for planting and getting into the fields. That was not there. Those things were not there. Oil was not promised necessarily, but the promise was bread. And this is where faith comes in. As we mentioned before, that there's a lot that's between tilling and eating. And faith is required for that span of time. In this promise, we're not promised all of those little things. I'm afraid that many times we are discouraged with the promises of God just because we're taking a sampling of how the planting's going. We're taking a sampling of what the weather is. We're taking a sampling of how the harvest is starting to look. and simply not trusting in the promise. The promise was bread. That was the goal. That was what we set out for. We set out for bread. That was why we tilled. That was why we planted. That was why we fertilized. That was why we weeded. That was why we're doing all the things, was for the goal, bread. And in this promise, bread is promised. It is the result that is promised, but not necessarily everything between there. And if we think about the promises of God, and we'll look at some of those in just a moment and plug all these thoughts into some of the promises of God, but if we look at those and think about those things, you know, sometimes we're discouraged financially. I get discouraged many times. I had a few bad weeks at work, and I got really discouraged. But you know, the promise of God is not always that the till will be full. That's not the promise. The promise was bread. Not that my till would be full. Not that I would drive a Lexus. The promise was bread. And sometimes we're taking a sampling of everything in between. Sometimes it's that way with our families. You might be thinking that I did everything that's in the Word of God, and look at my family. You haven't seen the end of it yet. You haven't seen the end. You're taking a sampling in the middle. It takes faith and time and waiting. But there's a promise of bread. And I'm afraid that many times we discount the end result. We discount the promise. We're fearful. We're worried. And we begin to despair. And we begin to not put a lot of weight in the promises of God because we're taking a sampling in the middle. We haven't seen the end yet. We're looking at what's going on now, and we're looking at the weather, and we're concerned, and we're fearful. But I just want to note there, as part of this pattern, that the means are not necessarily guaranteed. The middle part there of how we're going to arrive at bread, those things weren't given. All of those things were not there in this promise. Now I want to take a few moments and look at some of God's promises. And I mentioned that we see God's attributes in these promises, and that's why I love them dearly, because we see the way God is. We learn about His personality, and we get a glimpse of His glory in these things. I want to look at, first of all, the most greatest promise that we have, and that is this promise of salvation. I want to look at that a little bit. The promise of salvation, to be saved from our sins, to be delivered from hell, and to be brought in the presence of God Himself, the promise of salvation. To think about that for a moment, there's so much misunderstanding about that in the world that we live in. So much chaos and so many thoughts about it. But it's such a very simple promise, really, in the Scriptures. And one of the passages I like the most is Isaiah chapter 45, if you'll turn there. Just one verse here in this passage that we will read, Isaiah 45 and verse 22. We sing a song based off of this verse. Look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth. For I am God, and there is none else. We sing the song, look and live. Look and live. How can that be possible? It's a lot like till and eat. How can that be possible? How can it be possible that sinners can be right with God, that sinners can have eternal life? And yet He says, look and live. We see the condition here as we look at the pattern of things that we learned about God's promises. The condition is look. And again, I believe that you will be sovereignly brought to that place. I don't believe there's any lookers that will get to heaven and say, I looked and I wasn't elect. That won't happen. That's impossible. That will not happen. But that's not our message this morning. It's not in the sovereignty of God and in those thoughts, but I just want to bring out the simple idea that is brought forth in this verse, look and live. Now, there's a whole lot between there, and it requires faith. It requires faith. In our pattern of our promises, we saw that there's a condition, which in this case is look. We saw that there was a lot in between. that requires faith, the means of our salvation is the Lord Jesus Christ. He'll take care of all of that in between. And that is the way it is with all of God's promises. There's a condition and then there's a result, and He takes care of all of that. He takes care of the price. He's the one that makes it happen. In this case, it's look, and the result is live. And it requires, as all promises of God, faith and submission. Submitting to that way. There are other ways, just like we saw that there are other ways to earn a living. There are many other ways that people will try in their vanity, their vain. You've got to submit to the only way. Broad is the way that leads to destruction, but there's only one narrow way that God has ordained for salvation. When we look at some of the other promises of God, we can continue to see some of these same ideas. In Psalms 1, there's a promise of happiness, which is what most people have set out on some course in their life for happiness. Lost or saved. You set out on some course just plainly to be happy. You want to be happy within yourself. In Psalms 1:1, blessed, or I look at blessing as the opposite of cursed. Happy, things are coming together, things are going right. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. In his law doth he meditate day and night, and he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. We see here that in verse 2 we see a condition. The man that delights in the law of God. That's one of the conditions there of this happiness. He's a person that doesn't follow the way of the world. He doesn't follow after sinners, but he delights in the law of God. There is the condition there for this promise of happiness. We see the result there in verse number 3, that he will be like a tree planted by rivers of water. Nowhere in the promise does it guarantee that he'll be planted by rivers of water. It doesn't even promise water. But it promises that he'll be all right. It promises that he'll be fruitful, that he'll be happy. The means, again, are not promised. All of those steps in between there are not promised, but God has promised to be the provider. He has promised to fill that space in between. The condition and the result there. He has promised to be that one. How can we say that he'll be like a tree planted up by the rivers of water if there's no water and if there's no river and he's not planted there? Because God's character demands it. God's character says, I will make it this way. And that's what I see all through the book of Proverbs. You see, he that does this will do this. This that happens will cause this because of the character of God. Because he, by his power, will make it happen. In between the condition and the result is the power of God. And he doesn't guarantee the means of man, where many times we're looking for the means of man as a guarantee that God is going to come through on his promise. Right? We're looking for rain as some hope that God is going to be true to his promise. We're looking for things in between and we get discouraged. We get downcast and we begin to doubt the promises of God, and we haven't seen the end of it yet. It's not harvest season yet. It's not over yet. We have not seen the end, but yet we're beginning to despair. It reminds me of the story of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus after he had died. It wasn't over yet, but in their minds it was over. It was done. It was over to them, but it wasn't finished to him. Turn there, if you will, with me to the book of John. I believe it's in John chapter 11. And I want to notice the words of Jesus in verse number 40. We know the story. I'm not going to read the whole story, how that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead after he'd been dead for 4 days. But Jesus said to Martha, notice his words in verse 40. Jesus said unto her, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God. And I want to state to you that God is glorious whether you see it or not. But if you believe, you're going to see it. And it's going to bless your soul. And you're going to rejoice. And you're going to be like that blessed man in Proverbs or Psalms chapter number 1 that rejoices in his goodness. He's going to be true to himself no matter what you do. Whether you regard it or not, or whether you look at it or not, he's going to be true to it. But you have the opportunity to rejoice in it and not spend all your days discouraged. Because he that tills will reap, will eat. But why spend all of the summer fretting away? That's what we do, isn't it? We till and we plant and then we fret. We fret all the way. And God is true to himself. He's true to his promise. We've all eaten. I've never seen a Baptist starve. But we spend all the summer discouraged. I'm afraid that many of us as Baptists, the only joy we'll have is in the harvest when we get to heaven. We've spent our lives discouraged, worried about the promises of God, taking a sampling from the middle, expecting human means, expecting certain things to happen that God hasn't promised would happen. He promised a result. He didn't promise a means, and I'm glad he didn't promise a means. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that from the condition to the result is all his power. I'm so glad that he didn't say that if you till, and if you weed, and if you fertilize, and if it rains, and if this, you'll never ever find a promise of God that reads like that. I'm so thankful. Dig through the scriptures, you'll never find one that reads anything like that. You'll never find one that'll let you down. Although you're many times taking a sampling from the middle and you're afraid that it's letting you down, that's the way most of us live. That's where I get discouraged. I'm looking at the middle, I'm looking at the means, and I'm saying the promises of God don't work. And we get awful discouraged. Remember the disciples on the road to the Emmaus? They were discouraged. They were taking a sampling from the middle. Jesus is in the grave. They were confused, bewildered. This is where I spend most of my days. If I'm honest with myself, this is where I spend a great deal of time, confused, bewildered, not understanding the promises of God. But in between the condition and the result is his power. Don't expect any particular means. In fact, we're told in Isaiah 55 and verses 8 through 11 that his ways are not our ways. They're guaranteed not to be. In fact, we are guaranteed that the means will not be the means that we would expect. His ways will not be our ways. He does not work the way that we work. In fact, we're promised that all the while our labor here on this earth will, much of it will be in vain. And we're sowing in a cursed ground that will bear thorns and thistles, and we're guaranteed problems and difficulties, and he's going to triumph over all of that and be even more glorious. His ways are not our ways. Many today are frustrated because they're taking a measure of God's faithfulness by their expectations of what they think the means should be, of how they think God should play it out, of how they want him to do it. And so the result of that is, we see back in the book of Proverbs, is that many will go and follow vain persons. They'll follow a very vain way, an empty way. That's what vain really means, an empty way. They'll follow a way that won't work because they're afraid that God's way isn't going to work. And you know, really, when we think about it all in all, you know, the ways of planting and eating are pretty well established. I mean, they're pretty universal laws. If you just subscribe to that, you pretty much will have a harvest. It's pretty universal. And it's that way with God. It's a guaranteed harvest. It's a guaranteed blessing. But because we're afraid of the means, we're afraid of that which is in between, we're not willing to have faith, we're not willing to submit, we take up a vain way. We take up a very empty way many times. Lastly, I want to leave you with this verse concerning this thought concerning the means of God in Jeremiah chapter 33, just one of my favorite verses, one that I speak to myself. Jeremiah had great reason to question the means. In fact, really, Jeremiah hasn't seen the end of all of God's promises that were promised to him. In fact, his harvest is yet to come. He hasn't seen it yet. I don't know why we think the promises of God aren't valid unless they happen right here on this earth. I think it's because we're carnal, you know. Remember, Martha said to Jesus, "I know Lazarus will raise again at the last day." As if that was, you know, no big deal and didn't really matter. "I know one day he'll raise again, Jesus." And he said, "No, I am the resurrection." But some promises will not be fully fulfilled. That doesn't negate them. That doesn't make them less. In fact, it makes them more. But for some reason, our carnal minds think that doesn't count. "I know everything will be all right in heaven." That doesn't count. I don't know why we think that way, but Jeremiah had reason to question the means here. He's the prophet of God, and here he is in Jeremiah 33, verse 1. "Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah the second time while he was shut up in the court of the prison." I would have serious questions. "Lord, I don't get how this is profitable. This doesn't, I don't see the profitability of me being in prison." I will say to you that whether or not he saw the profitableness in his day, it's been very profitable to many believers that have turned to this passage for sure. I've heard many messages our pastors preached about Jeremiah and in his imprisonment. But the Lord came to him there. "Thus saith the Lord, the maker thereof, the Lord that formed it to establish it, the Lord is his name. Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not." Not, "I will show you things that you had thought of and you had planned and the means that you expected and how you thought it should go, but I'm going to show you things, Jeremiah, you never dreamed of. I have ways of provision. I have ways of doing things that it doesn't matter what happens in between. In between the condition and the result, God's not bound. And he will not be bound by any particular means. In fact, he often creates adverse situations to show us his glory. That's what Pharaoh existed for. Pharaoh was an adverse situation to show us the glory of God. And aren't you thankful that those things are in the Bible? Showing us the glory of God. Reassuring us of our problems. Reassuring us that when it looks terrible, it's never any harder for God. It would be harder for us. When things go bad, it would be harder for us. You may look at your financial portfolio and you may think, "I don't know how I'm going to pull this one out. Or I'm really taking a hit over here." But nothing is harder to God. It may seem harder to us. But because adverse things arise in the meantime, between the tilling and the harvest, it never is any harder to God. It can seem so extremely adverse and impossible, and it's not one bit harder to God than if it looked like it was a paved road. Not one bit. And he does that to reveal to us his glory. And so we see this our promise that we're studying here. If you till, he that tilleth will be satisfied with bread. We see that there's a condition. We see that there's a whole lot in between there that's not necessarily guaranteed a particular way or means. But it is guaranteed that God's power will be there. Between the condition and the result is the power of God. The steps and means are not promised. The result is promised. And we haven't seen the end of it yet. None of us have. None of us have. You know, we can speculate when we're at the funeral of someone that cursed God every day that we knew him. But I believe in a merciful God, and I believe that in their last hour he could have well met with that person. And I rejoice in that. We have no idea what could take place in those final hours. But sometimes we doubt God and we're taking a sampling of the middle and we haven't seen the end yet. None of us have seen the full end. of our homes, of our lives, of our finances. We've not seen the full end of our salvation as of yet. Call unto Him. He'll show you a way that you never even dreamed of. Turn the service over to our pastor.